Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very accomplished professional and author from Chicago, USA, Ellen Rogin. Ellen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here with you.
Thank you. Ellen is an abundance activist, a financial intuitive, speaker and a prosperity expert. She's an author, and all of you know I'm very partial to authors. She's an author of several books: Picture Your Prosperity, Messages from Money, How to Stress Less, Prosper More, and Reshape Your Relationship with Money. So, Ellen, before we talk about your books, tell me about your own journey in brief.
I started my professional career in public accounting and then quickly knew I didn't like that and moved into being a financial advisor, where I worked for about 28 years. Mm-hmm. And the fascinating thing about doing that work to me was always how people make financial decisions, how some people could have plenty of money for their life and still be worried about it. Mm-hmm. And other people could be working hard to keep things going, but had so much contentment. And so it wasn't what people typically think, like, oh, if I have mm-hmm. more money, then everything will be okay. And so that was what I did for many years. And I left that business because I felt like I really wanted to have a bigger impact with people mm-hmm. that couldn't sit across the table from me or even across the screen mm-hmm. now, and wanted to help ease people's angst around money.
Mm. So, you know, when I was reading and preparing for my conversation with you, you have a lot of wisdom in your books, you know, with related to prosperity or messages for money. And there's often this big debate, and I tell, and I guess as one gets older, I tell a lot of people, one more zero added to your net worth is not going to change my lifestyle. But my first question to you, Ellen, is how do you define prosperity? And how does it extend beyond financial wealth?
I love the word prosperity because, as you just said, it expands beyond material wealth. Mm-hmm. The actual dictionary definition is the condition of success or thriving. And I think that's truly what people want. Yes, we think we want just more material wealth, more financial mm-hmm. wealth, but we can all think of examples of people that had that and things just didn't work out well in their life. And yet there's other people who have that and have a happy, beautiful life with mm-hmm. wonderful relationships. So I love for people to think about it in a more expansive way and have that really be the goal versus, as you said, a couple more zeros.
Mm, well said. And, you know, what are some misconceptions about money that you address in your books?
Well, I see that people think about money as really only being in the material world and think about the things you are supposed to do to handle money, mm-hmm. like have a budget, have smart investments, and be a good saver, all of which can be super helpful. So I'm not saying that. I think it often gets ignored that we have this other relationship with money. So there's the material part, but there's also the ethereal part. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that relates to what we believe about money, what we think and say to ourselves about mm-hmm. money, how we are generous or grasping onto the money that we have. So there's this whole other realm that actually, I believe, feeds your ability to be materially, financially successful when you are able to handle more of your beliefs about money and truly have a beautiful relationship with money.
Mm, fascinating. You also talk about reshaping one's relationship with money. So my question to you is, what does a healthy relationship with money look like?
I encourage people to think about their relationship with money as if it were a personal relationship. Mm-hmm. And so whether it was a romantic relationship or a really good friend relationship, to think about, like, how are you showing up mm-hmm. in that? Sometimes people think about their relationship with money, expecting money to show up in a certain way for them, but they're mm-hmm. ignoring how they are showing up. Mm-hmm. So if you think of this as a metaphor, I actually believe we do have an actual relationship with money, but if mm-hmm. that's not what someone believes, it's a super helpful metaphor. Are you someone that is caring for your money? Are you trusting? Are you worried all the time? Are you clingy? Do you ignore it totally? Do you outsource it to someone else? Do you just look for a hookup with money and expect it to show up when you need it and then don't pay any attention to it other times?
Very interesting and great examples. Thank you. So my next question is, you know, given all the research you must have done for all your books, what is the biggest challenge you see people facing when it comes to money, and how do they overcome it?
The biggest challenge I see people facing when it comes to their money is the fear that can seep in. This scarcity versus abundance thinking. Would it be helpful if I explain a little
Absolutely.
Bit? People have heard those terms. Okay. So scarcity thinking tends to be fear-based, worry-based, aggressive competition. Like, so for me to win, you have to lose. It can also show up in ways that we can be envious or jealous of other people. So let's say something really good happened to a friend of mine and they got a new business deal. And part of me might be excited for them, but another part is screaming, why isn't that me? Or sometimes people be judgy, like, oh, well, it's because they don't have any ethics or blah, blah. They work all the time or some other way. That is all in the scarcity world. Abundance thinking is collaborative. It's generous. It's optimistic. It's expansive. There's more than enough to go around. And another way I think it's helpful for people to think about this. So about 7 years ago, my husband did an Ironman competition. For those of you who aren't familiar with that, it's a triathlon on steroids.
Yeah.
So first they swim 2.4 miles, then they bike 100, and I think it's 112, it could be 120, and then they run a marathon. Like, it's this incredible athletic accomplishment. So when Stephen did his Ironman, he did it in Louisville, Kentucky, and the swim, he swam in the Ohio River. Now, Stephen's a good swimmer, but he did phenomenally well for his age group, way better than he thought he would do. And part of the reason that was is because they were swimming with the current. So I like to think of abundance thinking as swimming with the current. It's just easier. And scarcity thinking is swimming against the current. Now, I often ask audiences when I speak, can you do really well and go against the current, have scarcity thinking? And the answer is yes. But why would you want to? Like, why would you want to? And make it harder for yourself instead of going with the current, having great relationships, having people want to help you in your life and in your business by going with the current.
But, you know, just to continue with the same example that you've shared with me about abundance thinking and scarcity thinking, is this also related to a stage in life that we all go through? We can become abundant in our thinking once we have reached a certain stage in life and have some money in the bank.
Well, I like to say that generosity precedes prosperity.
Correct.
That if you're waiting to be generous or give to other people till you have it, it's going to slow things down and it's going to make it harder. And let's just give an example that's not necessarily directly financial, but my strategy always has been in business. And certainly when I started as a financial advisor was to give what I wanted to get. So if I wanted to get more referrals, I was out there seeing who could I help in their business. Now, I come out of financial services and there's this old school, at least in the United States, idea of, oh, you give to get. So Asha, I'll give you referrals, but if you don't give them back to me, then we're done. Now, sometimes that's the case. Like if I just kept giving and you just kept taking and never seeing how you could help me, then that might not be a great relationship. But sometimes I could give to you because you do an amazing job in what you do and serve people. And all of a sudden a referral will come in from someone else.
That's true.
And I think that's how things, it's good. What goes around comes around, just not always from the same person.
Well said. Thank you. My next question is, what are the first steps someone should take to start stressing less about money?
Well, I think it would be helpful to also explain why it's important to stress less, besides it feels bad. Like, who wants to feel anxious and nervous about things? There's studies that have shown, there's a book called Scarcity, and the researchers found that when people's backs were really up against the wall financially, their IQ actually dropped. So you can't make good decisions if you're freaked out. So I believe that it doesn't seem like a financial strategy, but having a contemplative practice is very helpful. So I've been a meditator for many, many years, and I think that has been one of the things that has helped me be as successful as I have been in my business, because I'm able to quiet down all the chatter, not all of it, right? I have a mind that likes to chatter, but I can get quiet enough of the time to start hearing good intentions and get ideas that are creative. And so whether you sit in meditation, you could do walking meditation, running meditation, just even taking a few conscious breaths is very helpful. So that's certainly one thing that you could do. This idea of giving is what we were talking about before. The kind of dirty little secret about generosity is we do it because it feels good. You think you're doing it because you're so benevolent, which is true, but if it didn't feel good to do it, we might not do it that much.
Correct,
There,
correct.
and there's something in our brain that's called subjective wealth. And what that is that when we are generous with our financial resources, if you were to give away, like, for example, that was done in US dollars, 500 US dollars, you get the same kind of buzz as you would getting a $10,000 raise. So it's internally, you're like, oh, I must be wealthy if I'm able to give money away.
Well said. Well said. Thank you. My next question is that, you spoke of meditation. I want to ask you about mindfulness. What role do you believe mindfulness plays in financial planning?
Oh, that is such a good question. So, one of the definitions, first of all, for mindfulness, because it can be confusing, can be a type of meditation, it can be a way of being. A definition I like is, just noticing what's happening in the present moment without any judgment. And I love the word noticing, because it makes it really practical for me. Like, I look around my office right now, always when I do this, I notice something I haven't seen in a long time. So, being mindful in your financial planning, I think, is very helpful. I don't like the word budgeting because I feel like it's restrictive and people, who wants to budget? But having a spending plan, so it doesn't mean you shouldn't know where your money goes. I think you should. But having a spending plan feels more expansive. And being mindful of how you're spending is a really great trait, being really deliberate, because I think it's easy to just keep doing things without even paying attention to them, or having recurring charges, for example, like subscriptions we've subscribed to that we don't even remember we have anymore. And so being mindful, just in a very practical sense, is knowing where your money's going and deciding if you value where you're spending it.
Well said. So my next question now is comes back to what you were speaking about abundance and scarcity. How do you suggest individuals balance the desire for wealth with the need for happiness and fulfillment?
Well, my question back to you is, why would they be mutually exclusive? Why would you need to balance them? Like, that's a belief. And I think we operate out of this belief system, like, oh, if you have wealth, you have to work really, really hard and not have relationships with your family and not take good care of your health and not be happy. But I don't think that's actually true. I think that can be just a limiting belief that we have,
Correct.
that they are mutually exclusive. I remember years and years ago when I was a financial advisor, I asked a client a question about contentment, a similar question like that. And she was so confused. It was the first time anyone, she's like, why wouldn't I be content? Like, what does that have? What does my contentment have anything to do with money? And I thought that was a very evolved response. And so I would just ask people to think about, like, why would they have anything to do with each other?
That is so true. I mean, this is something which has been written about a lot, and I was speaking to a French guy called Dominique Lapierre, who wrote a book called Freedom at Midnight, which is about Calcutta. And his first reaction was when he said, and he started, went in the 60s to Calcutta, which was reasonably poor. And he says, I was surprised people were very happy. And he says, that's the first time I realized that you don't need money to be happy. Thank you. What a great response you've given me. My
Well,
next
and I
question.
would all, can I just
Yeah.
add one other
Yes, of
thing to
course.
that?
Of course. Of course.
That belief that I won't be happy if I have a lot of wealth because it's too hard is what can limit you from actually creating what you want. And
Absolutely.
that is really how, you know, when I think about, I grew up in a family where education was really valued. And I thought if I just get A's and study and work really hard and study, then I will make a lot of money. And my first job, I worked, it was the first job in financial advising. There was another guy there who started well after me, did not have the educational pedigree I had, all the letters after my name, and within 3 months was making twice as much money as me. And I was like, well, something's wrong here in my beliefs. And I think he really had this belief that he had an internal message that was different than what I had, and
Absolutely.
one that I think was more helpful for him earning more. So I think for all of us to think about, what are we saying to ourselves? Isn't it helpful? Is it helpful or unhelpful?
Well said. My next question is, what financial habits do you consider essential for someone looking to improve their financial well-being?
I'm going to go very tactical here. In addition, because we talked a bit about having the right mindset from a practical standpoint, this sounds so basic, but what I saw over and over is my clients that were really good savers met their goals. They spending less than you earn. Now, sometimes people have windfalls, they inherit money, or they sell a business for lots and lots of money, they win the lottery. That is not most people. And you don't have to do that to have financial success. And it can be that simple. Spend less than you earn. Don't do anything stupid with your money. Like, do take a flyer, put all your money on something that's really high risk. And be generous. I know that it doesn't sound like sexy answers to that question,
No,
but
but
I think it can be that
the real
basic.
answers, absolutely, the real answers and very wise answers. So my next question is, how do you integrate ethical and socially responsible considerations into one's financial planning?
I love the idea of looking at what you really value, because even that question of ethical and social considerations would probably vary by people, like what they consider that to be. Now, there's some people that invest in what socially responsible investing because that's important to them. Other people, we talked about on the savings, I mean, excuse me, on the spending side, looking at your values. And I would also add, if you have generosity goals, to add them into your financial plan. When I talk about giving as a strategy for bringing abundance in, you know, it's well established and well talked about to have a systematic savings plan, like having money come off the top through your employer or just out of your checking account. But having a systematic giving plan can also loosen your grip on being worried about money, and it may hopefully align with your social values as well.
And how can parents teach children about money in a way that sets them up for prosperity?
I love this question, and I would encourage parents out there to start even before you think your kids are old enough to start having the conversation. And if you haven't done that, don't think it's too late. We develop our attitudes and beliefs about money at an age much earlier than we could possibly imagine. So Bruce Lipton, who's a cellular biologist, says between conception and age 7 is when we get a lot of our subconscious beliefs, and that includes your money beliefs. So being conscious of how you're talking about money in front of your children. Are you fighting about it with your partner? I have lots of people who I do consultations for now who will tell me about their money upbringing and say things like, this one woman told me, she goes, what her dad kept saying, what do you think, you're a Rockefeller? Like every time she wanted something that was seemed, like a lavish. And she was like, why can't we have a pool? And maybe they couldn't, but he kept saying that. And sometimes we hear good things that are helpful from our parents, and sometimes we hear things that are limiting. I would also recommend that parents start an allowance for their kids at a young age if you can afford to do that. So when our kids were 5 years old, we started giving them allowance, and we broke it into three parts that were based on our values and what we believed. There was a part for s saving. So they put it in their piggy banks or their wallets and eventually a bank account. A part for spending, so they could learn to spend on things that were important to them. And we were kind of hands off with that, unless it was something really unethical, like they weren't buying drugs or weapons at 6 years old, thank God. But they could spend on what they wanted. Even if I didn't think it was valuable, I wanted them to make that decision. And the last part was forgiving. And so we had a pool of money that they could decide to give it to causes or people that were less fortunate than us. And
Fantastic.
we did that all through high school and college, and then I wasn't like doling out. My kids didn't get, I was kind of a hard on this. And so unless it was a holiday or their birthday, I didn't buy them stuff in between that I didn't think was a necessity. I'd be like, well, save your money for it if you want this other toy or something. And I think they learned they're both very social, very financially
Fantastic.
responsible.
Wonderful, wonderful. So, time for two more questions for you. My question is, what impact do you hope your books will have on readers' lives?
I just got the chills from this question. So, I mentioned why I left my practice to begin with, but the real meta goal is that I believe that if people can stand in their power with money, that means practically, emotionally, at their soul and heart level, that they'll stop asking the question, am I going to be okay? And start asking, how much can I give? And when they do that, the world will change. There's plenty of financial resources in the world. They're just not allocated in ways that make things better for other people.
Well said. And my last question for you, Ellen. What is one piece of advice you would give to someone who feels completely overwhelmed by their financial situation?
The piece of advice I would give is to focus on gratitude. And I know this, the research on gratitude is actually really amazing. And many of us have heard this, but it's so powerful. It can improve our health. I know it can improve our wealth. So it would be focusing on when things feel hard or they feel overwhelmed, what are they thankful for right now? Is there a roof over their head? Is there food in their refrigerator? Is their health good? And I really love it. And money tells me this all the time when I'm doing consultations for people, that it likes when people are also grateful for their financial resources. I'm grateful for the money flowing into my account from my job. Also, a beautiful thing to be teaching your children. And I think it's a really good financial strategy as well.
Wow. And on that note, Ellen, thank you so much for talking to me. I think some messages that I have picked up very, very strongly from you is one is gratitude. You know, be grateful for what you have. And if you start to internalize it, things will fall into place. Second, you know, if you're happy with what you have, resources will more or less find their way to you. And that's another way of saying that if you're content, then there will be very important inflows coming into you from various places. I love the example you gave me of your children. You know, a part goes into saving, a part goes into spending, and a third goes into giving. I think that is such wise advice that you have given to all our viewers and listeners, and I hope many people follow this. Thank you again for speaking to me, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.